Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. When Sir John Templeton created the Templeton Prize 33 years ago, it was awarded for progress in religion. In the first year, it was given to Mother Teresa in Calcutta. Well, several times since then, it's been given to scientists who advance spiritual matters, and this year's recipient is the Nobel Prize-winning physicist Charles Townes. For the past 40 years, Townes has spoken of the need for science to make room for religion, saying that science leads us to understand how things work, but it's religion which can take us to a deeper understanding of the purpose and the meaning of the world and the universe. Townes goes further. He says that the closer you look at the nature of both science and religion, the closer you get to realizing just how superficial the distinctions are. So this hour, we'll talk with Charles Townes about science and religion. Where do you see common ground between the two? Or do you see common ground? Are you worried that just by opening this door inevitably will lead to a shouting match over evolution and creationism? And for that reason, is it hard to open up a conversation about what it is that science and religion do have in common? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. My guest is Charles Townes, who won the Nobel Prize in 1964 for his work in quantum electronics, helping invent the laser. He's joining us from a studio at the University of California in Berkeley. Thank you so much for being with us.
Nice to be with you.
And congratulations on the award.
Well, thank you very much. It's a wonderful honor.
I'm wondering, in reflecting back, and I mean back over the centuries here, there seems to be such an honorable history of science and religion working together. When we go back and look at, you know, what it was that the Greeks were doing, when did the divisions begin? When were science and religion forced apart?
Yes, for a long time, science and religion were very close together. And the intellectuals were religious leaders and thought about science. But so-called modern science, beginning in Europe maybe a couple of hundred years ago, as it began to discover new things and disagree with some of the specific word-by-word interpretation of the Bible, then there began to be a clash between the two.
Was Charles Darwin is Charles Darwin the villain here then?
Well, he's one of them. If you want to call him a villain, I wouldn't.
No, indeed.
I think he was a great figure who really taught us something new. But evolution, yes, that was one of the problems. And Darwin felt that animals and humans and life was developed somewhat gradually. That was contrary to the six-day creation in the Bible, and that upset some religious people.
Tell me when it was that you started speaking out publicly about the convergence between science and religion.
Well, you know, it was somewhat accidental that I became involved in this. I've always been religiously oriented and interested in religion. But I was in New York at Columbia University teaching then, and I was attending Riverside Church in the men's group there. So, well, they knew I was a scientist and attending church, and they didn't know many scientists who were attending church. And they said, well, would you come and talk with us about the view of a scientist about religion? And, oh, dear, could I say anything about that? And I said, well, all right, I will talk about it. So I came and I gave them a talk. And then they put it on the radio. And then the editor of Think magazine, the IBM Think magazine, heard it. And he phoned me up and said, oh, I'd like very much to publish this. Oh, dear, I had to write it up then. So I wrote it up, and he published it, and then it became spread all over and very popular and created a lot of ideas, a lot of reactions. And I was asked to write more articles and give more speeches. And so since then, every once in a while, I've given another talk of my views and written articles. So as I say, it was an accident that I became involved at all, and but maybe no accident, because I'm very religiously oriented.
Tell me in reflection, if you think back to when that all took place in the 1960s, if it was any more controversial at that time than it is today to have a scientist speaking out about the place of religion.
Well, it is controversial today as it was then, but I think, broadly speaking, there was more separation between science and religion than there is now. I believe the two are growing together somewhat, and there's more and more discussion back and forth between scientists and theologians and so on, which I think is a very healthy thing, to have open discussion of the ideas and the comparison.
Although I still hear and get a sense that people are told that they have to make a choice, that they either embrace science or they embrace religion, that there's not a lot of flat ground between the two for people to occupy.
Well, that's quite true. Some people take that kind of position, what we frequently call the fundamentalists in religion, tend to be against some of the scientific conclusions. And they're also the equivalent of fundamentalists in science. The fundamentalists in science will think, oh, science knows all the answers. This is it. Nothing else is right. And so there are separations.
So literalists on both sides, I suppose.
They're literalists on both sides and absolutists on both sides. Now, I think we all have to recognize, well, while we may understand a good deal, there's a lot we don't understand. It's very clear that many things we don't understand in science are very puzzles and inconsistencies in science, puzzles in religion, mysteries, and so on. We have to recognize that, and we don't understand everything. We understand as well as we can, but keep open-minded.
I wonder if it's any easier for you to examine the convergence of science and religion as a physicist, as an expert in astrophysics. If you were a biologist, for example, would it be more troublesome?
Well, I'm not sure, but I think overall, I believe biologists tend to be more objections to religion than physicists do. I think biologists are not really down to the fundamentals the way physics is. In physics, getting down to really fundamentals, it's the most fundamental of the sciences. Getting down to really fundamentals, they see the inconsistencies. My experience is that biologists generally say, oh, well, life, sure, that forms very easily. It's just formed out of molecules, so whenever there's the right kind of climate and so on, we're going to have life. But in fact, we don't know how life was formed. We don't know what the probability was. We understand something, I believe, about evolution and how after the initiation of life, it developed in more and more complex forms into humans. But its initiation, we don't know. I think biologists tend to look at it a little bit more simply than physicists do.
Well, maybe there are just more inconsistencies and paradoxes in the world of physics than there are in biology at this time. I'd probably be pilloried by biologists for saying that. But
I'm not sure there are more paradoxes, but I think physicists see them more clearly because we get down to basics, so to speak. We get right down to the bottom and see, oh, my, here's some things we just don't understand. There are inconsistencies. But we have to accept them. This seems right, and this seems right, but they're not consistent with each other. But, we'll have to, for the moment, try to believe both of them and see where we go. And physicists are down to the bottom of things this way, and they see the inconsistencies, I think, a little more clearly than biologists generally do.
Although if we take a look at what's happening in the world of astrophysics and the answers that are coming, that have come from the Hubble telescope, answers that are expected in scientific equipment that is yet to be deployed, I'm wondering if 50 years from now or 100 years from now, it'll be harder to find the convergence of science and religion because science will have discovered more answers to those questions that remain unanswered.
Well, that's an interesting question. My own feeling is it's probably the other way around. And if you look recently, in the recent decades, the discoveries in cosmology really are very suggestive of religious views.
Can you give me an example of what you mean?
Well, of course, if you interpret the Bible word for word, you would say that the universe was created. Well, many people say 6,000 years ago, and it was created over 6 days. Well, who knows what 6 days meant then, but anyhow, it was created rather suddenly, in 6,000 years ago. Now, physics and astronomy have shown that, no, it's much older than that. It's 13 billion years old or so. But many physicists, Einstein, for example, and many other physicists felt, well, of course, the universe couldn't have been created. There can't be any beginning. That's unimaginable. It has to always been here and always the same. Einstein felt very strongly about that. until, well, it was discovered that the universe was expanding. Well, he was surprised, but then, well, he said, well, it's expanding, but it's always been expanding, and it's always been here. Now, fairly recently, in the last couple of decades, scientists, physicists, and astronomers have become convinced, no, there was a unique moment in the past of the universe, a unique moment when it began, about 13 billion years ago, from a tiny, tiny point, and it's expanding. There was a unique moment in the universe, so that's one of the things that say, well, after all, there was a beginning. Contrary to science belief, but it's also contrary to the simple interpretation of the Bible. It's right. Older than 6,000 years. Now, in addition to that, scientists have become recognized more and more that this is a very special universe. It's fantastic how it's happened to come out. The laws of physics have to be almost exactly the way they are for the wealth of kinds of atoms, chemicals that we have to exist. They have to be almost exactly the way they are for the sun to exist the way it is and last a long time and give us steady energy. They have to be almost exactly the way they are for life to exist for us to be here. So
I need to just stop you there and make the point that maybe there is a place for religion there. But Connection listeners, what do you think here? Can science and religion coexist when it comes to questions of the Big Bang and creationism and evolution? What do you think? We're at 1-800-423-8255. Dr. Charles Townes is with us this hour. He's the recent recipient of the Templeton Prize for his thinking along this line. He's with us for the hour. We'd like to hear from you. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. My guest this hour, Dr. Charles Townes. He won the Nobel Prize in 1964 for his work on quantum mechanics and last month won the Templeton Prize, the fifth scientist to be awarded the Templeton Prize. And he's here this hour talking about the convergence of science and religion. And if I can sort of go to the point where most people are most familiar with this. We've all seen the controversy in the newspapers over stickers in high school biology textbooks and the sort of inflamed debate that exists between those who are in favor of creationism being taught and those who say evolution is not just a theory, it needs to be taught that way in school. When I look at that debate, I'm wondering what kind of room there is there for a convergence of science and religion, because the camps seem so entrenched on only one side or the other. What do you think, Mr. Townes?
Well, if you considering the debate about evolution, for example, my view is it's very easy to bring the two together. The problem, those who don't want to believe the scientific interpretation of evolution and say that, well, all life was created almost over a very short period of time. I think we still have room for God's creation in the steady evolution of the universe, the development of the universe. The universe is so unusual, laws of physics are so unusual, it even suggests there has to be in the plan, a carefully worked out and fantastic plan. And in addition, God may still direct the universe, and in its development of animals and of humans, this is a steady evolution, I believe, but there's no reason to think that God was not involved in that creation, so that it's simply a question of creation over a longer time versus an instantaneous time. The Bible, of course, indicates it's a short time, but after all, you think of the Jewish people and they're writing those words. What concepts could they have had? What words could they have used back in those days? They didn't understand the things we understand now. What more could they have said? I think they're very creative and really remarkably right in what they said. But why should all the details be exactly right?
Some of the people who look for middle ground in this debate use the words intelligent design as a way of saying that there was and remains a hand of God in the creation and maintenance of the world. Do you think that's a useful way of talking about this convergence of science and religion?
Well, it seems very clear that it's a fantastic design. This universe has been fantastically designed, and hence one might say intelligence. The problem with the use of the word intelligent design, which I think is an appropriate description, but the problem with it is it's been sort of misused by some of the people who are arguing one way or the other, and it's been a little contaminated, I think, with the arguments. But overall, it's clear that this is a very specially designed universe, and what else would one say but intelligence?
And so when you look at that convergence as you see it, is it then only really in the creation of the peacock's tail or the pink flamingo or the human where you see religion having a place in helping explain why things or how things are the way they are? I guess my question is, are you looking only at the moment of the creation of these things, or are you looking at it more where religion and the hand of God remains involved in the maintenance, the management, the ongoing life of the world?
Oh, I certainly think it's ongoing, and I don't think creation was just an instantaneous thing. I think God's influence on our universe is continuous. And the broad reason why I believe these must come together and will come together is what they're all about. Science, as you commented initially, science is an effort to understand the structure of our universe and how it works. Religion is an attempt to understand the purpose and meaning of our universe. Well, if our universe has any purpose and meaning, then its structure has a lot to do with that, and those two must come together. If we understand either one or the other very well, then we must see how they interact and why they're similar. Now, in addition to that, I think our methods of understanding either one are remarkably similar. We don't generally recognize that, but our methods for understanding either religion or science are very, very similar in a broad sense.
I want to come back to that, but just one point that you made, that this using religion to figure out the purpose or the meaning of the universe. I mean, someone could say, there is no purpose. There is no meaning. It just is.
Someone could say that. We can say almost anything. And we have to decide what's the most likely. And if there's no meaning, then one has to ask, well, how did the universe happen to come out this way? Now, some scientists who don't want to believe there's a religious creation think, well, it came out this way just because there's an infinite number of universes. Everyone is a little different and so on. This one just happened to come out this way. Well, one can, in principle, believe that, if you want to believe that, but that means there's an infinite number of universes, all different physical laws. Then you have to ask, well, why were the physical laws all different in each one of these? And are there these infinite number of universes out there that we can know nothing about and so on? Well, that's just an assumption, a faith, you might say. If you want to believe that, you can, but it doesn't seem the most reasonable solution.
Charles Townes is my guest. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. We're going to Nashville for our first call. Mark's on the line. Hello, Mark.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, tell me what you're thinking.
Well, I'm actually a zoologist by training, and I've often discussed this issue of creationism and evolution, having grown up in Arkansas, where we had a bit of bother about that a few years ago. Actually, you know, within the world of zoology, as we look at it, there's not really a great deal of debate or not really a great deal of room for creationism as science, because it's simply, as religion, is outside the realm of science. To put it pretty succinctly, creationism, or the so-called creation science, is not a scientific theory. It is not a scientific principle. It's just simply does not meet the criteria we have for scientific explanations, and therefore it's completely outside the realm of science and into the realm of religion. The two simply don't meet. For the purposes of science, we assume there's nothing supernatural. That limits the ultimate usefulness of what we learn from science, perhaps, and we can't necessarily be sure we're getting the absolute truth, but that's just the rules we have to go by.
Are you saying to Charles Townes, Mark, then, that there is no convergence of science and religion, neither has a place in the other's understanding?
Within science, the assumption is that the universe proceeds according to mechanistic, naturalistic laws that are the same everywhere, and that we can discover. That's the whole purpose of science. If we don't start with that assumption, we can't really get very far. You know, for example, in debating the issue of creationism, you can't, it's not a scientific theory simply because it's not falsifiable. It's not possible to conceive of a set of study results, for example, that would cause creation science to be false. No matter what result one gets, one can always change the rules or come up with an explanation for why it's, you know, to explain that.
So, Mark, for example, just stay with me on the line for half a second. Let's hear from Charles Towns on this.
Well, I think the separation between natural and supernatural is rather artificial. It's very understandable that people separate them that way, but it's rather artificial. Let's consider, for example, free will. Free will is simply not allowed by science. Our present science today will not allow us to have any free will. And yet we are pretty convinced we have free will. So that's a supernatural phenomenon. Now, my view is, well, let's keep trying to understand and try hard to understand, and someday we'll understand better. Maybe we'll understand how free will works, and then we'll call it science. Well, okay. As we understand things better, maybe we'll call them science, but there's some things in science which we clearly don't understand, too, such as consistency of relativity and quantum mechanics are inconsistent. So we don't understand it. Is that supernatural? Well, okay. I think the separation between the two is quite artificial, and we should continue to attempt to understand as much as we possibly can. Whether we'll understand everything in the long run is quite doubtful, but surely we'll understand more, and that'll be exciting, and some of these things will come together a little bit better, I believe.
Mark, back to you.
Yes. I would just simply say that I think that the sort of the rules for how science work would preclude us considering something as supernatural. Free will wouldn't necessarily be considered unscientific, for example. It depends on, you know, it's not necessarily a supernatural. By supernatural, we're talking about something that transcends the laws of the universe, as it were. It's something like a god that can do whatever God wants. You know, saying that it's not scientific, on the other hand, doesn't say it's necessarily untrue or less true. It's simply saying it's not scientific. We can't approach that. We can't learn about it through science, necessarily. And requiring scientific evidence for creation or for the doctrine of creation, in a way, removes the need for faith there. And I think it sort of reduces the concept of faith. For example, if one wants to believe that the world was created in six literal 24-hour days, 6,000 years ago or whatever, one can certainly do that on religious grounds. And how do you reconcile the scientific data? Well, simply that God created the world in a state of motion, and God created all the fossils, and God created the elements in such a state that it looks like they've been there for billions of years. And you say, why would God do that? And the religious answer would be, who cares? That may be simply how he did it. So, you know, it's possible to reconcile the religious belief with what you see scientifically, but the religious belief is not scientific, and the creationism, creation science, simply is not scientific.
There's an interesting word that you used that I want to go back to Charles Towns with, and that is the word faith, because, Charles, I think you use that for both religion and science. Am I right?
Yes, science has faith, and many people don't recognize it that way. Science makes assumptions. And an assumption is an assumption. On the basis of that assumption, then they try to draw conclusions. That assumption is a faith. And if you look at it carefully, I think most scientists recognize that. Science has its beliefs, which they stick to and leave in and turn out not to be right, such as the belief for a long time that the universe never had any beginning. And yet it did. That was a faith, an assumption. And it's recognized mathematically, it's been proven that you can never logically prove anything completely. You make certain assumptions, you use logic to make conclusions from those assumptions, but you can never prove that assumptions are self-consistent. And so I say there's a great parallelism between science and religion and between our methods. I don't think those differences are real. They may seem real to many people, but I think if you look at them very basically, they're not real differences.
All right, let's take another call. This one from Brighton, Massachusetts, and Brendan's joining us. Hello, Brendan.
Hello. I've studied both these subjects pretty extensively, just as a hobby in general. And I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that the conflict only comes in with a particular Christian point of view. And no other religion really does have this particular conflict with science. Science seems to be catching up with some of the most ancient philosophies on Earth. I mean, even the ones that led to Judaism and Hinduism never have had a problem with science. Science has been trying to catch up with them.
So the problem is between science and those who would support a literal reading of the Bible? Is that the one place where you're saying there's conflict then, Brendan?
Yes. I've never heard anybody who is Jewish argue on the side of creationism, although it's Old Testament and a Jewish book. They don't interpret it that way, and it's their book. They're never arguing with the creationists.
So maybe, Charles, it has more to do with science and philosophy than it does with science and religion, or does that take it too far off?
Because still with philosophy, it's only a Christian philosopher has this particular conflict.
Let's hear from Charles Townes on this.
Well, I think it is Christianity that has particularly emphasized an apparent conflict. Particularly Eastern religions have generally unified science and religion and have no problem with it. But I don't think it's only Christianity. I think there are some other cases where the interpretation of religious script disagrees a bit with science. But it is Christianity that is certainly strongly emphasized and certain other religions which have no problem at all.
I want to try and use an example here to better understand what you're saying. If we go back to one of the great symbols of Christianity, we could talk about the Star of Bethlehem, the Star of Wonder, this sign from God that Jesus was born, the shepherds came. Now, a Christian looks at that and says, right, that's a sign from God, and that's what it is, and we don't really need to take it any further. It's the point that Brendan was making earlier. And a scientist who doesn't believe in that would say, you know, we're going to go back, and we're going to look for the supernova. We're going to look for some natural phenomena that explains that great light in the sky at that moment. Now, you're saying that the differences between science and religion are superficial, but I see the differences between science and religion on that example, that attempt to find an example, as being very far apart. Help me with that.
Well, first place, of course, scientists have looked for whether or not there was something in the sky at that point, and they found some things that might have been it. But I don't think that's quite the point. The question is whether such a statement has to be absolutely true. And I would say no, it doesn't have to be absolutely true. It can be an analogy, an idea, and so on, without being literally true. That doesn't upset me if it's not literally true. But the significance of it, I believe, is true. Not necessarily there was indeed some light, but there was something that inspired these people, you see. Now, in fact, one can find some events in the sky that might have possibly have been that.
And the point is that both sides search, or that only the science side looks then for that answer?
Well, again, it depends on what you mean by the side. The extremists in religion would not search. They say, of course, that's right, and there's no question about it. The scientists, some of them would say, well, let's look carefully and see if it's really true, and maybe I can prove it's not true. My point of view is, well, it's very interesting if one can find that, but it doesn't make a great deal of difference in my general thinking and philosophy, whether that's true in detail or not. But so one can take a lot of different kinds of points of view, and I think we have to be as sensible and logical about it as we can.
All right, Connection listeners, do you take that sensible and logical approach to allowing space for both religion and science in understanding the world, the universe, the natural phenomena around us? Or do you think that one side has to exclude the other? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. My guest this hour, the Nobel Prize-winning physicist Charles Townes, who this year won the Templeton Prize, an award given out for, and this is the way the prize people describe it, progress toward research or discoveries about spiritual realities. We're talking about the convergence of science and religion. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. You mentioned Dr. Townes, Einstein, a while ago, and I know from talking about him on an earlier program not long ago, his search for the unified theory of the universe. Now, you'll correct me on this if I get it wrong. Was, in his mind, kind of a search for the mind of God? Were those his words?
I'm not sure whether those were his exact words, but I think there's something in it.
Yeah, the reason I'm asking you about it is I'm wondering if you look back at that as sort of a figure of speech or an acknowledgement by Einstein that, in fact, if you were ever really to get to a unified theory of the universe, you would have discovered the mind of God.
Well, if we understand everything about the universe, yes, I think that's right. I'm not sure Einstein's idea was to discover absolutely everything and how it began and so on, but on the other hand, he wanted to understand a great deal, and that would have come close, I believe.
When we also talk about the place of religion in the work of the scientist, you tell a story about the conclusions that led to your winning the Nobel Prize. There's a revelation in there, am I right?
Yes, I think it could be called that.
Can you tell that story?
Well, as I've commented before, I think science and religion and our ways of understanding are remarkably similar. The great scientist Percy Bridgman once said, and he was asked, well, what is the scientific method? Oh, he said, the scientific method, that's to work like the devil to get the answer with no holds barred. And we use all of our human abilities to try to understand. And we use faith, we use logic, we use experiments in both science and religion. Our experiments in religion, we look around, we see how people behave, we see how societies work, we think of our own feelings and so on. Those are observations, those experiments, and then we reason about them and so on. I think there's great similarity, including revelation. And now let me try to answer your question a little more directly in my own case. You see, I had worked for several years trying to figure out how to get down to shorter wavelengths. I was working with microwaves, which are a wavelength about a quarter of an inch, say. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get down to something less than a tenth of an inch, less than a twentieth of an inch, and so on, down into the infrared region in order to do good science. And I wanted to get down there, and I tried and tried. My students tried different things. They didn't work. I was made chairman of a national committee to try to see how we might do this, and we visited all kinds of laboratories. Nobody had any ideas. And the last meeting of our committee was in Washington, and I worried about it. I got up early in the morning, and breakfast wasn't ready yet, so I went out in the park and sat on a bench. It was a beautiful sunny morning, and azaleas were out and beautiful, and I thought about, now, why haven't I been able to get the right idea here? I went through the ideas, and this one doesn't work because that, and this one doesn't work because of this reason, and this one. Hey, wait a minute, I haven't been right about it. Oh, look, molecules will work, after all. I thought molecules wouldn't work. Hey, they will work. I saw how to do it. I took out an envelope, and wrote down some of the equations and the numbers. Oh, it looks like it really will work, and I was just terribly excited. Well, now, I think one can compare that to, let's say, Moses' case, where he was worrying about the children of Israel and what could be done to help them and so on. Suddenly, in front of a burning bush, he had the idea what to do, a revelation. And where do new ideas come from? We don't know. Where do new ideas come from? Every once in a while, there's a new idea. Where does it come from? Revelation, I would say.
See, now, my own feeling about that is that if someone handed me a theory about how to make shorter wavelengths without the kind of scholarship that you bring to it, that might be a kind of divine revelation. But in your case, maybe it was just all those pieces of knowledge finally clicking together on that park bench on that day.
Well, revelations come to people who are concerned about it. That's where the revelations come.
If you're thinking about it, yes, indeed. 1-800.
If you're thinking about it. And I think you'll find that true in the biblical cases, too.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Let's go to Cambridge for our next call. Sherman's on the line. Hi, Sherman. Thanks for calling.
Hello, Dick. Hello, Professor Towne. My question has to do with the fact that you seem to be a theistic person. That is, you believe in revelation. I imagine you believe in prayer. Therefore, you believe that God, in some cases, can do things that aren't possible in some sense. Otherwise, you know, why would God intervene? So I'm wondering which kind of impossibility you think God is capable of. Is he capable of the classic logical impossibility whereby he can make a rock so big that he can't pick it up? Or do you believe in the physical kind of impossibility that God can carry out? For example, God could have a plane go 500 miles an hour due east and then instantaneously reverse itself and go in the opposite direction at the same speed with an instantaneous change. What is God capable of in your view? Because you believe in revelation, I guess you believe in prayer.
Let's hear from, stay with me, Chairman. I want to hear from Charles on this.
Well, the answer is I don't know. But I would like to comment on that. You see, I would emphasize that there are many things we don't know. I've already mentioned free will. We don't see in science how free will can possibly be there, and yet we believe in it. Now, in addition, in science, there are many things clearly we don't know. We know that there's an enormous amount of matter in the universe, and we can sense only about 5% of the total matter in the universe, the so-called dark matter. We don't know what in the world it is. There's something there. What in the world is it? And there are many laws of science we don't understand, the inconsistencies. And so I would say, well, there are lots of things there we don't know, and I don't know just what can happen. But I recognize that the things I don't understand and our laws of science are not perfect, they're not complete, and there are many things in the universe we don't know about. There may well be forces, including the forces of God, which we can't at present sense in any very direct way, but may be there, just as we can't sense this 95% of the matter in the universe. We don't know what in the world it is. We can't touch it, see it, and feel it, and yet we recognize that it has a force of gravitation. There's something there.
What about Sherman's question about the power of prayer, though? Is there that?
Well, why not? Why can't there be some power of prayer? We can't prove that there's not. We don't know, and I think we must be open to those possibilities, and think about what makes the most sense. What makes the most sense, really, and be open to possibilities of things we don't presently understand?
Let's go to Brookline, Massachusetts, for our next call. Teresa's on the line. Hi, Teresa.
Hi. Congratulations, Dr. Town. My question has to do with love, because I do believe that science can inform religion and also that religion can inform science. And I think that one area where science is maybe struggling to be able to describe is love. And I'm wondering if, in your study of physics, is there any way for you, in the language of physics or the language of science, to understand love, that force between us that I think is what religion is trying to capture and understand as God?
Do you mean, Teresa, I'm going to go to the professor in a minute, but do you mean love between two humans?
Yes, but probably even beyond that. But yes, love between each other, human beings.
Well, I think that's an example of where our religious ideas, one can see how they might be connected with the natural logic and experimentation of science. Because love, we understand what a powerful influence love has on people, how helpful it is, and so on. We can sense that, and we can see it. It has a very powerful effect, and see its importance, and so on. So that's a way we can observe, and we see, yes, there's a substantial effect here. Now, love is an effect, a feeling between two people. Well, what is that physically? It's a little hard to describe and so on. So it has a very strong religious meaning, and yet we can see some of the science involved, or what I would say is some of the parallelism with science. We can see its effects. We can sense it. We can see that it's useful. very valuable, so I think that's an example where it's very clear one can't separate completely the religious views and, let's say, the experimental psychological point of view of science.
Let's take another call, this one from Tewksbury, Massachusetts. Craig's with us. Hi, Craig.
Hi. I have one question and one comment. My question was with regard to, like, the you mentioned that there's things that in physics that he can't explain, or I guess something like the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, or the ratio of the constants being perfect to stabilize, like the sun. Does that actually justify belief in Christianity or a specific religion? Or does that justify that we don't actually know everything at this point with science? My comment
was... Primarily it says we don't know everything, and it justifies a recognition of lack of understanding religious views. It certainly doesn't justify some one particular religion. In fact, I think when we talk about religion, we shouldn't talk about just Christianity. Well, I would talk about religion rather broadly. There are many religions, after all. And we say comparison of science and religion. We don't have to just compare science and Christianity, although some people would do it that way.
Craig, did you have one other point you wanted to make?
Yeah, one other comment. I think that a lot of the discussions on like NPR with religion now is almost like a conflict that I see is, for 1,500 years, we had really no justification to question things like the Bible and the Quran. And now science has given us a lot of reason to raise warning flags that these books may be wrong. And I feel like the next, like, last 500 years and possibly the next 100 years is a real fascinating time where how do you wean the entire human race off of these old books? I mean, that's almost seems like where we're headed. That was my comment.
Well, I think it's going to be fascinating, all right. I would say, however, that there was, after all, differences of views 2,000 years ago. There were different religions. Different religious views differed very greatly. And some people didn't believe the particular religion of their sect, so on. So there are many different views in the past. But we are finding out new things in science. It's exciting and amazing how much we've learned over the last few hundred years. Next 1,000 years... I wish I could live that long to see it. And I think there are going to be revolutions in our viewpoints. I would point out that as we make revolutions, we still recognize that the old ideas have some validity. For example, classical mechanics, Newtonian mechanics, was completely overthrown philosophically by quantum mechanics. And old scientists had great trouble with that. Quantum mechanics completely overthrew it. Things were not deterministic. Newtonian mechanics, they were deterministic. Quantum mechanics says, no, they're not deterministic. Completely overthrew them philosophically. And yet we still teach Newtonian mechanics. It still works very well. It's a good approximation. And so as we change our ideas, including I expect we'll change our religious ideas, the old ideas will still have some validity. They may not be perfect. We may revolutionize our viewpoints, but the old ideas will have some validity, and we are living by them now. We'll continue to live by them in the future partially, but we'll change our viewpoints.
Let me ask you a question, and this to the professor in you. If you're studying something in a classroom or lecturing on it, and it might be some difficult concept about dark energy, is there a risk that in talking about a convergence of science and religion that some student at the back is going to put up his hand and say, well, can we just skip trying to puzzle that through, please, Professor? Because we could just say that's religion, and then we don't have to look for it an answer to that. I'm not trying to be flip about it, but I'm wondering if by introducing religion into the discipline of science, you allow shortcuts. You allow people to say, let's not worry about that. It must be religious.
If I were teaching a class in science, I probably wouldn't use the term religion or talk about it in that sense. Certain scientific ideas may have a bearing on religion, but that's not the kind of thing that I would say in a class. Now, if someone asked me about it, sure, I would talk about it. They ask me about it. Or if one's teaching a philosophy or religious course, then certainly should be talked about. But in a course in science, that need not come up at all.
But that's what you're talking about, trying to bring the two a little bit closer together. And I guess I'm wondering if you were to design a new course, would it be that there's a course on astrophysics that could include religion rather than saying, well, that you study in this course and this you study in my course?
Well, if I were asked to design a course on that subject, yes, I would. But if I give a course in astronomy, I would talk about astronomy, and I probably wouldn't bring up the word religion.
I mean, it's interesting because in this sort of political climate in America today, you almost wouldn't be allowed to do that. You wouldn't be allowed to introduce religious ideas into a science classroom because people would be wagging their fingers about crossing lines that ought not to be crossed.
That's probably true, but it much depends on how rigidly you talk about it. For example, in a religious course, even in a university, if you try to sell one particular religion only, that might not be very, very acceptable. On a philosophy course, particularly, if you try to sell one religion only. Yet in a philosophy course, you'd probably want to talk about religions. So much depends on just what the nature of the course is. In any case, I think we need to be open-minded. We should not shut out other ideas completely, but we also shouldn't try to sell particular points of view. When we're educating people, we should try to have them understand everything they can.
And are you thinking that in fact, in institutions of higher learning, we're getting a little closer to opening up to different points of view or not?
I think the academic community is getting closer to opening up different points of view, yes. Specifically in teaching in the classroom, I'm not sure there's a great difference, but I hope in the long run there will be.
Dr. Towns, thanks so much for spending an hour with us. Charles Towns, a professor of physics at the University of California at Berkeley, won the Nobel Prize in 1964, recent winner of the Templeton Prize for his work in science and religion. Our program is produced by Jennifer Ehrlich, Catherine Fenollosa, Jen Mattson, Virginia Prescott, Christina Russo, Mary Stack, and Doug Sugars. We have help from Sarah Baker, Annie Hopengarten, and Patrick Kiker. Our senior producer is Tara Murphy. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.